Everyone moved as silently as possible through the empty palace kitchens, emerging to a gray day in a side courtyard. It was secluded, with a wall screening it off from the city. The sight as they came around the side of the palace was horrifying. It looked like the entire force had been cut down, that none of the cavalry could possibly still be alive. Jensen couldn't stand the sight of so much carnage, yet it was so overwhelming that she could not look away. The dead, horses as well as men, lay tangled in a ragged line down the hillside, fallen in the place where they had met the foe head-on at a full charge. In the distance, near the trees, a few scattered horses, their riders no doubt dead, nibbled at the grass. "There are no enemy dead," Jigang said, surveying the sight as he limped along with the aid of a pike a soldier had handed him. "What could have done this?"
"Nothing living," a sister said.
As they moved quickly down the hill, making their way past the silent battle line not far in front of the heaps of corpses, others of the cavalry, far down the slope on the other side of a wall in an area among small garden buildings and trees, spotted the emperor and raced out to protect him. Soldiers on horseback, numbering less than 1,000 out of the over 40,000 they started with, swept in to surround the company returning from the palace. A number of the sisters rode in, pulling in close to the emperor to provide an inner circle of defense. Rusty, trailed by Pete, trotted across the lawns accompanying the tattered remnants of the cavalry. When Jensen whistled, Rusty recognized the call and rushed in to be close to her. The mare, nuzzling Jensen's shoulder, voiced a plaintive whinny, eager for comfort. Rusty and Pete weren't cavalry horses, trained to be accustomed to the terrors of war. Jensen ran a soothing hand over the horse's trembling neck and rubbed her ears. She gave similar comfort to Pete when he pressed his forehead against the back of her shoulder.
"What happened?" Jigang called out in a rage. "How could you let yourselves be taken like this?"
The officer leading the men on horseback looked around in dismay.
"Excellency, it was out of the clear air. It wasn't anything we could fight."
"Are you trying to tell me it was ghosts?" Jigang bellowed.
"I think it was the horses the scout smelled,"
another officer said. His arm was bandaged up high but soaked in blood.
"I want to know what's going on," Jigang said as he glared around at the faces watching him. "How could this have happened?"
As men brought extra horses, Sister Perdita dismounted close by.
"Excellency, it was some kind of attack involving magic. Phantom horsemen invoked by wizardry is the only explanation I have."
His menacing eyes were leveled at her in a way that made even Jensen quail.
"Then why didn't you and your sisters stop it?"
"It wasn't anything like the conjured magic we ordinarily encounter. I believe it had to be a form of constructed magic, or we would have not only detected it, but been able to stop it. At least that's what I assume. I've never actually seen any constructed magic, but I've heard of it. Whatever this was that attacked us would not respond to anything we tried."
The emperor was still frowning darkly at her.
"Magic is magic. You should have stopped it. That's what you were here for."
"Constructed magic is different than conjured, Excellency."
"Different? How?"
"Rather than using the gift on the spot, constructed magic has already been made up in advance. It can be preserved for a great period of time, thousands of years, maybe even forever. When it's needed, the spell is triggered, and the magic is loosed."
"Triggered by what?" Sebastian asked. Sister Perdita shook her head in frustration.
"By just about anything, as I've heard it told. It just depends on how it was constructed. No wizard now is able to construct such a spell. We know little about these ancient wizards or what they could do, but from what little we do know, a constructed spell could be something kept dry that comes to life when you get it wet. For example, something to help fertilize crops when the spring rains come. It could be triggered by heating, like a cure taken for a fever. The cure carries a construction in and the fever triggers it. Others are triggered by a little magic, some by an elaborate application of incredibly intricate wizardry and great power."
"So," Jensen reasoned, "someone with magic must have unleashed something so powerful as these phantom horsemen? A wizard? Or a sorceress or something?" Sister Perdita shook her head.
It could be that kind of constructed magic, but it could just as easily be a spell, albeit an incredibly powerful one, kept in a thimble and triggered by exposing the construction to anything, horse dung even.
Emperor Jigang waved off the very notion. But something that small and easily triggered wouldn't be this powerful.
Excellency, the sister said, in this you can't equate the apparent material size of the construction or its trigger with the result. They have no relational value, at least not in the terms in which most people think. The trigger has no bearing on the power of the construction. Even the construction and its trigger are not necessarily relational. There is simply no rule by which to judge a construction.
The emperor swept an arm out before the tens of thousands of men and horses tangled in death. But surely something of this magnitude had to have been something more.
The army of phantom horsemen who carried out this attack might have been triggered by a wizard drawing spells in magic dust while speaking an incredibly complex invocation. Or it could just as easily have been a book containing a cavalry counter that is simply opened to the proper page and held out before the attacking force, even from miles away. Even the simple fear of a person holding out such a construction could be the trigger.
You mean anyone might accidentally trigger one, then? Jensen asked.
Of course. That's what makes them so dangerous. From what I've read, that kind is exceedingly rare. Because they can be so dangerous, most are layered in complex precautions and fail-safe mechanisms involving the most profound knowledge of the applications of magic.
But, Jensen asked, once a person, a wizard, with that advanced knowledge removes those layers of precautions and fail-safe mechanisms, then they might be set off by one final simple trigger?
Sister Perdita gave Jensen a meaningful look. Exactly.
So, Jigang said, gesturing around at the thousands of bodies, this force of phantom cavalry might be sent out again at any moment to finish us off?
The sister shook her head. As I understand it, a constructed spell is usually good only once. It's used up by doing what it was constructed to do. That's one reason they're rare. Once used, they're gone forever, and there are no longer any wizards alive who can make more.
Why haven't we encountered such constructed spells before? Sebastian asked with growing impatience. And why now all of a sudden?
Sister Perdita stared at him for a moment. A picture of bottled anger that Jensen knew she would never have dared direct at the Emperor, even though the attack on the Confessor's palace, which he ordered, against her warning, had resulted in the deaths of many of her sisters of the light. With a show of deliberate care, Sister Perdita pointed up at the dark keep, hard against the mountain above them.
There are 1,000 rooms in the wizard's keep if there's one, she said in a low voice. A good many of them will be stuffed full of nasty things. It's likely that when we drove them here for the winter, that wizard of theirs, Wizard Zorander, finally had the good long time he needed to search through the keep, looking for just the kinds of things he hitherto lacked, so as to be ready for us when spring arrived, and we advanced toward Adendril. I fear to think what catastrophic surprises he has yet in store for us. That keep has stood invincible for thousands of years.
Sebastian's glare turned as dark as Jigang's. Why haven't you warned us about this? I never heard you say anything.
I did. You were gone.
You've also advised against many other things as well, and we've overcome them. Jigang growled at her. When you fight a war, you must expect to take risks and to take casualties. Only those who dare win.
Sebastian gestured up at the keep. What other things might we expect? Constructed spells are only one of the dangers in fighting these people. None of us sisters really considered constructed spells a great threat because they're so rare. But as you can see, even one constructed spell is profoundly perilous. Who knows what even more deadly things might be waiting to be unleashed? What's more, there's a whole world of dangers we can't even begin to conceive of. Their winter weather alone has killed hundreds of thousands of our men without the enemy having to lift a finger or risk a single man. That alone has done more damage to us than almost any battle or calamity of magic. Did we expect such losses from something so simple as snow and cold weather? Did our size and strength protect us from it? Are those hundreds of thousands any less of a loss because they died of fever rather than some fancy application of magic? What difference does it make to the dead, or those left to fight? I admit, to a soldier, winning because your enemy falls ill might not seem very glamorous or heroic, but dead is dead. Our army outnumbers these people many times over, yet we lost those hundreds of thousands to fever because of simple weather. Not the magic you are so worried about us protecting you from.
But in a real fight, Sebastian scoffed, then our numbers really mean something, and we will win out.
Tell that to those who died of fever. Numbers don't always determine the winner.
That's outlandish, Sebastian shot back.
Sister Perdita pointed at the line of dead.
Tell it to them.
We must take risks if we're to win, Jigang said, settling the matter. What I want to know is if the enemy can be expected to throw more of these constructed spells at us.
Sister Perdita shook her head, as if to say she had no idea.
I doubt that Wizard Zorander knows much about the constructed spells kept there. Such magic is no longer understood well.
He apparently understood one of them pretty well, Sebastian said.
And that might have been the only one he understood well enough to use. As I said before, once used, constructed spells are used up.
But it's also possible, Jensen interrupted, that there are more constructed spells he does understand.
Yes. Or, for all anyone knows, this could have been the last constructed spell in existence. On the other hand, he might be sitting in there with 100 of them in his lap, all much worse than this one. There is simply no way to know.
Jigang's black eyes gazed out at his fallen cavalry elite.
Well, he certainly used this one to cut.
There was a sudden blinding flash off at the horizon. The world around them lit with the intensity of a flash of lightning, but the flash didn't die out as lightning did. Jensen seized the reins just under Rusty and Pete's bits to keep them from bolting. Other horses spooked, rearing up. White hot light flared up from the river valley down over the hills, in the direction of the army. The light was so white, so pure, so hot, that it lit the clouds from underneath all the way to the opposite horizon. It was a light of such power, such intensity, that many of the men dropped to a knee in alarm. The incandescent glow expanded outward with incredible speed, dwarfing the hills, yet it was so distant that they heard nothing. The rocky slopes of the mountains ringing the city were all illuminated in the harsh glare. And then Jensen heard, at last, a deep rumbling boom that vibrated in her chest. It shook the ground beneath their feet. The powerful, resonant boom stretched out into a growing, clacking roar. A dark dome expanded up through the light. Jensen realized that, because of the distance, what looked to her like a spreading dome of dust had to be debris at least as big as trees or wagons. As the dark cloud expanded upward through the light, it dissipated, as if evaporating in the might of that consuming heat and light. Jensen could see a wave, like the rings made by tossing a rock in a pond, radiating outward, except that this was a single wave racing across the ground. As everyone stood transfixed, gripped in fright, a sudden wall of wind, driving dirt and sand before it, blasted up the hill toward them. It was the shock of the wave that finally reached them. It was so abrupt and so powerful that if the branches were not already bare, they would have been stripped of leaves right then and there. Limbs snapped as trees shuddered under the concussion of wind. More horses panicked, bucking and bolting. Men dropped to the ground to protect themselves from what might come next. Jensen, staggered by the blast of wind, shielded her eyes with a hand while huge soldiers recited prayers learned in childhood, begging the Creator for salvation. Jigang stood facing the sight with angry, defiant challenge.
"Dear spirits,"
Jensen finally said, squinting, blinking the dust from her eyes as the aftermath seemed to abate.
"What could that possibly have been?"
Sister Perdita had gone ashen.
"A light web."
Her voice was low and heavy with what Jensen had never detected from her before. Dread.
"Impossible," Emperor Jigang roared. "There are sisters down there warding for light spells."
Sister Perdita said nothing. She couldn't seem to take her gaze from the arresting sight. Jensen could tell that the pain was wearing heavily on Sebastian, but he spoke forcefully. I've been told that a light web can't do any more damage than... He gestured back at the palace. Perhaps to destroy a building. Sister Perdita said nothing, and with that silence offered the evidence to the contrary. That was clearly before his eyes. Jensen took the reins to both horses in one hand and put the other to Sebastian's back in sympathy. She ached for him and wanted him to be somewhere safe where his injury could be tended to. The sisters had said that it was serious and needed their attention. Jensen suspected that the wound he suffered at the hands of the sorceress needed the intervention of magic.
"How can it be a light web?" Jagang demanded. "There's not even anyone here, no troops, no army, no force, except maybe a couple of their gifted."
"That's all it would take," Sister Perdita said. "Such a thing needs no supporting troops. I told you that something was wrong. With the keep here in Aidendrill, there's no telling what even a lone wizard might be able to do to hold off an army, even our army."
"You mean?" Sebastian asked. "It's like the way a small force in a high pass, for example, can hold off a whole army?"
"That's right."
Jagang looked incredulous.
"You mean to say that you think that even that one skinny old wizard, in a place like the keep, might be able to do all that?"
Sister Perdita's gaze shifted to the Emperor. "That one skinny old wizard, as you call him, has just managed to do the impossible. He has not only found what was probably a light web constructed thousands of years ago, but even more inconceivable, he somehow managed to ignite it."
Jagang turned to stare off to where the light was finally dying.
"Dear Creator," he whispered, "that's right where the army is."
He wiped a hand back across his shaved head as he considered the frightening implications.
"How could they ignite a light web among our army? We're warded for that. How?"
Sister Perdita's eyes turned toward the ground.
"There is no way for us to tell, Excellency. It could be something as simple as a box containing an ancient light web from which he removed all the fail-safes and then left it for us to come across. As our men set up camp, maybe a man found it, wondered what was in the innocent-looking little box, opened it, and the light of day was the final trigger. It could be something entirely else that we could never begin to dream up or imagine, much less forestall. We'll never know. Whoever triggered it is now part of that cloud of smoke hanging over the river valley."
"Excellency," Sebastian said, "I urgently advise that we get the army out of here. Move them back." He paused to wince in pain. "If they're able to unleash such a defense, with all the gifted and their protection we have, then taking the keep might be impossible."
"But we must!" Jagang roared.
Sebastian sagged forward, waiting for a stitch of pain to pass.
"Excellency, if we lose the army, then Lord Rawl will triumph. It's as simple as that. Aidendrill is not worth the risk it has proven itself to be."
This was not so much the Sebastian Jensen knew, as it was Sebastian, the Order's strategist, speaking.
"Better for us to withdraw and fight another day on our terms, not theirs. Time is our ally, not theirs."
In silent fury, the Emperor stared off toward his imperiled army as he considered Sebastian's advice. There was no telling how many men had just died.
"This is Lord Rawl's doing," Jagang finally whispered. "He has to be killed. In the Creator's name, he must be killed."
Jensen knew that she was the only one who could accomplish such a thing. Chapter 51. Jensen paced in the dimly lit tent, her footsteps silent across the Emperor's opulent carpets. A sister stood vigil near the outer entry, making sure that no one could come into the tent to disturb the Emperor, or, more importantly, to harm him. Outside, a massive contingent of guards, including more sisters, patrolled the area. Occasionally, the sister over by the outer entry glanced at Jensen as she paced. Pacing was all she could do. Her insides were a painful knot of worry over Sebastian. He had lost consciousness on the long ride back to the encampment. Sister Perdita said that he was in danger of losing his life. Jensen couldn't bear the thought of losing him. He was all she had. Emperor Jigang was also in grave condition after having lost so much blood and then having to endure the long, hard ride back with the tattered remnants of the elite cavalry. But he'd refused to delay his return for any reason, even his own well-being. He never thought of himself, only of getting back to his army. Both men were at last now secure in the confines of the Emperor's tents, being attended to by the Sisters of the Light. Jensen had wanted to stay with Sebastian, but the sisters chased her out. The Emperor had been made worse by the sight of the army. He'd been fit to kill anyone who gave him an excuse. Jensen could understand his rage of emotion. The light web had ignited close to the center of the encampment. Even this many hours after the event, the place was still mass confusion. Many units had scattered, preparing for the possibility of an imminent attack. Others, it was suspected, had simply run for the hills. In the area where the light web had ignited, there was nothing but a vast depression of blackened ground. In the ensuing chaos, no one had been able to determine how many men had been killed. It was next to impossible, with so many either killed or scattered, to get an accurate count of units, much less individuals. But there was no argument that the devastation was staggering. Jensen had overheard whispers of over 500,000 men turned to dust in an instant, and maybe as many as twice that number. In the end, the numbers killed might prove to be much higher. There were inestimable numbers of seriously injured soldiers, men burned or blinded, men severely cut or with limbs taken off by flying debris, men partially crushed by heavy wagons and equipment toppling on them, men made deaf, men so insensate, so stupefied, that could only stare, unblinking, at nothing. There were not enough army surgeons or sisters of the light to even begin to attend to the tiniest fraction of the wounded. With every hour that passed, thousands of those who survived the initial blast died of their injuries. As staggering a blow as it was not fatal to the great beast of the Imperial Order Army. The encampment was immense, and precisely because it was so vast, much of it had survived. According to the Emperor, it was only a matter of time to replace the dead with fresh troops, and then he would unleash his men to seek vengeance on the people of the New World. Jensen was beginning to understand why Sebastian had always been so adamant that all magic must eventually be eliminated. There was no good that she could think of that could offset such wickedness. She hoped magic could at least spare his life. Despite Emperor Jigang's conviction that their forces would soon recover, there were difficult times ahead for them. Much of the food had been destroyed along with vast amounts of equipment and weapons. Every tent in the entire encampment had been at least knocked down. It was a cold night and many men would be exposed to the elements. Fortunately, even though the Emperor's tents had been flattened, men had been able to erect it again for the injured Emperor and Sebastian. Jensen paced, burning, not only with worry but with rage. She doubted that a greater monster than Richard Rawl had ever lived. Surely, no single man had ever been the cause of so much suffering in the world. It was inconceivable to her that anyone could have such a lust for power that they would lead a cause that could murder so many people. She didn't see how Richard Rawl could be a part of creation. Surely, he was the Keeper's disciple. Tears ran down Jensen's cheeks at her gnawing apprehension. She prayed fervently to the good spirits that Sebastian would not die, that the sisters could heal him. In agonizing worry, she halted in her pacing and leaned on a table she had not seen the last time she had been in the tent. When the tent had fallen, it had been hastily erected, and this table, probably from the Emperor's private quarters, apparently hadn't been replaced to its proper location. There was a small bookcase at the rear of the top. Looking for something that might divert her mind from the ache of anxiety while she waited for a word of Sebastian, Jensen idly scanned the old books. She didn't understand the words on any of them. For some reason, though, one in particular drew her attention, something about the rhythm of the foreign words. She pulled the book out and turned it towards the candlelight, trying to read the title. She ran her fingertips over the four gilded words on the cover. They made no sense to her, yet they seemed somehow almost familiar. Jensen gasped in surprise when the sister, who had been over by the door, lifted the book from her hands.
These belong to Emperor Jigang. Besides being very old and very fragile, they are quite valuable. His Excellency doesn't like anyone to touch his books.
Jensen watched the woman inspect the book for any damage. I'm sorry, I meant no harm.
You are a very special guest, and we have been instructed to accord you every privilege, but these are His Excellency's most prized works. He is a man of great learning. He collects books. As a guest, I think you should respect his wishes that no one but he touch them.
Of course. I didn't know. I'm sorry.
Jensen chewed her lower lip as she looked back at the curtain drawn across the doorway to the back where Sebastian was being seen to. She wished there would be some word. She turned back to the sister.
I was only puzzled because I've never seen such words.
These are in the tongue of the Emperor's homeland.
Really?
Jensen gestured to the book the sister was returning to his place.
Do you know what it says?
I don't know the language very well, but let me see if I might be able to tell. In the dim light, the sister squinted at the book for a time, her lips moving silently as she worked at the translation before finally sliding the volume back in its place.
It says, The Pillars of Creation.
The Pillars of Creation? What can you tell me about such a book?
The woman shrugged.
There's a place in the old world called by that name. I would guess the book must be about that.
Before Jensen could ask anything else, Sister Perdita suddenly emerged from behind the rear partition of the tent, the candles casting harsh shadows across her somber face.
Jensen rushed to meet her.
How are they?
She asked in an urgent whisper.
They're both going to be all right, aren't they?
Sister Perdita's gaze shifted to the sister who had just replaced the book.
Sister, you are needed by the others. Please go help them.
But His Excellency told me to guard.
His Excellency is the one who needs the help. The healing is not going well. Go and help the sisters.
At that, the woman nodded and rushed off to the back.
Why isn't the healing going well?
Jensen asked after the sister had rushed behind the heavy curtain.
A healing that is started and then interrupted, as Emperor Jigang's was, creates unique problems, especially since the sister who started it is dead. Each person brings unique ability to the task, so to go in later and try to unravel exactly how it was started, much less build on it, makes the healing much more difficult and delicate.
She offered a small smile.
But we're confident that His Excellency will be fine. It's just a matter of some difficult work by the Sisters of the Light. I imagine they will be at it most of the night. By morning, I'm sure everything will be under control and the Emperor will be as strong as ever.
Jensen swallowed. What about Sebastian?
Sister Perdita appraised her with a cool, unreadable look.
I would say that depends on you.
On me?
What do you mean?
What do I have to do with healing him?
Everything.
But what is it you could possibly need from me? You have but to ask. I'll do anything. Please, you must save Sebastian.
The sister pursed her lips as she clasped her hands.
His recovery hinges on your commitment to eliminating Richard Rawl.
Jensen was baffled.
Well, yes, of course, I want to eliminate Richard.
I said commitment, not words. I need more than mere words.
Jensen stared a moment.
I don't understand. I've traveled a long and difficult journey to come here so that I might secure the help of the Sisters of Light so that I can get close enough to Lord Rawl to put my knife in his heart.
Sister Perdita smiled that terrible smile of hers.
Well, then, if that's true, then Sebastian should have nothing to worry about.
Please, sister, just tell me what it is you want.
I want Richard Rawl dead.
Then we share the same goal. If anything, I'd venture that I feel more strongly about it than you ever could.
One of the sister's eyebrows lifted.
Really?
Emperor Jigang said that the sister who was trying to heal him up in the palace was killed by wizard's fire.
That's right.
And did you see the man who did it?
Jensen thought it strange that Sister Perdita didn't ask how it was that she wasn't also killed by the wizard's fire.
He was an old man, skinny, with wavy white hair sticking out in disarray.
First wizard Zedekiah Zul Zarander.
the sister said in a venomous hiss.
Yes, Jensen said. I heard someone call him Wizard Zarander. I don't know him.
Sister Perdita glared.
Wizard Zarander is Richard Rawl's grandfather.
Jensen's jaw dropped.
I didn't know.
Yet here was a wizard doing all this damage, nearly killing Emperor Jigang, and you, who claimed to be so committed, failed to kill him.
Jensen held her hands out in frustration.
But I tried, I did. He got away. There was so much going on.
And you think it will be easier to kill Richard Rawl? Words are easy. When it comes to true commitment, you couldn't even stop the threat from his doddering old grandfather.
Jensen refused to allow herself to fall to tears. It was a struggle. She felt foolish and shamed.
But I...
You came here for the help of the sisters. You said you wanted to kill Richard Rawl.
I do, but what does that have to do with Sebastian?
Sister Perdita held up a finger, commanding silence.
Sebastian is in grave danger of dying. He was struck by a dangerous form of magic cast by a very powerful sorceress. Those shards of magic are still in him. Left alone, they will shortly kill him.
Please, you must hurry then.
An incensed expression silenced Jensen.
That magic is also dangerous to us, to those trying to heal him. For us sisters to attempt to remove those embedded shards of magic endangers our lives as well as his. If we are to risk the lives of sisters, then I want in return your commitment to kill Richard Rawl.
How could you place a condition on the life of a man?
The sister straightened with contempt. We will have to let many others die in order to devote the necessary numbers and time to healing this one man. How dare you ask that of us? How dare you ask us to let others die so that your lover might live?
Jensen had no answer to such a terrible question. If we are to do this, then it must be for something worth more than those lives that will die without our help. Helping this one man must count for something. Would you expect less? Would you not want the same in return for us saving this man so dear to you? He's dear to you too, to the Imperial Order, to your cause, to your Emperor.
Sister Perdita waited to see if Jensen would now be silent. When Jensen's angry gaze faltered and finally sank, the sister continued.
No one individual is important except for what value he can contribute to others. Only you can provide that value for him. For us saving this man so dear to you, I must have in return your unqualified commitment to stopping Richard Rawl once and for all. Your material commitment to killing him.
Sister Perdita, you have no conception of how much I wish to kill Richard Rawl.
Jensen's hands fisted at her sides.
He ordered the murder of my mother. She died in my arms. His rule resulted in Emperor Jigang nearly being killed. Richard is responsible for hurting Sebastian, for suffering beyond any imagining, for murders beyond estimate. I want Richard Rawl dead. Then let us free the voice.
Jensen stepped back in shock.
What? Grushdiba.
Jensen's eyes went wide at encountering that word aloud.
Where did you hear that?
A self-satisfied smirk settled comfortably on Sister Perdita's face.
From you, dear?
I never...
At dinner with His Excellency.
He asked you why it was you wished to kill your brother. What was your reason, your purpose? You said,
Grushdiba.
I never said any such thing.
The smirk soured to condescension.
Oh, but you did.
Are you going to lie to me, to deny that word has been whispered in your mind?
When Jensen stood silent, Sister Perdita went on.
Do you know what it means, that word, Grushdiva?
No,
Jensen said in a very small voice.
Vengeance.
How do you know?
I know that tongue.
Jensen stood rigid, her shoulders drawn up.
What is it exactly you are proposing?
Why, I'm proposing to save Sebastian's life.
But what else?
Sister Perdita shrugged.
Some of us sisters will take you out to a quiet place where we can be alone, while some of us stay here and save Sebastian's life, like you want. In the morning he will be better, and then you and he can be on your way to kill Richard Rawl. You came here for our help. I am proposing to give you that help. With what we do for you, you will be able to accomplish your task.
Jensen swallowed. The voice was strangely silent. Not a word. It was somehow more awful that it was silent right then.
Sebastian is dying. He has only moments before it will be too late for us to save him. Yes or no, Jensen Rawl?
But what if
yes or no? Your time has run out. If you want to kill Richard Rawl, if you want to save Sebastian, then utter but one word. Do it now, or forever wish you had.
Chapter 52. After they picketed their horses, Jensen gave Rusty a rub on the forehead. With trembling fingers, she smoothed her other hand along the underside of the jaw as she pressed the side of her face against the horse's nose.
"Be a good girl until I get back," she whispered.
Rusty neighed softly in response to the gentle words. Jensen liked to imagine that the horse could understand her words. From the way her goat Betty had always cocked her head and stilled her little upright tail as Jensen confided her innermost fears, she had firmly believed that her hairy four-legged friend could understand every word. Jensen peered overhead at the claw-like branches swaying in the muted light of a full moon, occulted by a milky veil of ethereal clouds drifting across the sky, as if gathering to bear silent witness.
"Are you coming?"
"Yes, Sister Perdita."
"Hurry, then. The others will be waiting."
Jensen followed the woman up the side of a bank. The mossy ground was littered with leathery dried oak leaves and a layer of small branches. Roots emerging here and there from the loose loam provided enough footing to climb the steep rise. At the top, the ground leveled out. The sister's dark gray dress made her nearly vanish as she moved into the thick brush. For a woman with such big bones, Jensen noticed that the sister moved with disturbing grace. The voice remained silent. In tense times like this, the voice always whispered to her. Now it was silent. Jensen had always wanted the voice to leave her be. She had come to know how terribly significant such frightening silence could be. The full moon, being only thinly obscured, provided enough light to make their way. Jensen could see her breath in the cold air as she followed the sister into the thick of the woods back between the low-spreading boughs of balsams and spruce. She had always felt at home in the woods, but somehow, following a sister into the woods didn't give her the same comforting feeling. She would rather be alone than in the company of the stern woman. Ever since Jensen had given her the only word that would save Sebastian's life, Sister Perdita had settled into a demeanor of blunt superiority devoid of any tolerance. She was now firmly in command and was certain that Jensen knew it. At least she had kept her word. As soon as Jensen had given hers, Sister Perdita had urgently set other sisters to saving Sebastian's life. While other sisters were sent on ahead to prepare whatever it was they had to prepare, Jensen was allowed to briefly look in on Sebastian to reassure her that everything possible to save him was being done. Before she had left his side, Jensen had bent and softly kissed his beautiful lips, run her hand tenderly back over his white spikes of hair, and gently brushed her lips across both his closed, sky-blue eyes. She had whispered a prayer for her mother, with the good spirits, to watch over him. Sister Perdita had not stopped her or hurried her, until at the end when she pulled Jensen back and whispered that the sisters huddled all around him had to be left to do their work. On her way out, Jensen had been allowed to put her head into the private chamber of the Emperor and saw four sisters bent close over his injured leg. The Emperor was unconscious. The four sisters, working feverishly on the Emperor, seemed to be in pain themselves, sometimes putting their hands to their heads in agony. Jensen hadn't known until she saw the four, and Sister Perdita explained, just how unpleasantly difficult healing could be. The sisters were not concerned, though, about the life of the emperor being in immediate danger, as they were about Sebastian. Jensen held a balsam bough back out of her way as she followed the sister deeper into the forbidding wood.
"Why do we have to go so far from the camp?"
Jensen whispered. The horseback ride had taken what seemed hours. Sister Perdita's tail of hair fell forward over her shoulder when she looked back, as if it were a particularly inane question.
"So we can be alone to do what must be done."
Jensen wanted to ask what must be done, but she knew the sister wouldn't tell her. The woman had turned away all questions with answers that were no more than general. She said that Jensen had given her word, and now it was her duty to uphold her end of the bargain, to do as she was told until it was finished. Jensen tried not to think about what might be ahead. She put her mind instead to thinking about leaving in the morning with a healthy Sebastian, about being back out on the trails, out in the countryside, away from all the people, away from the grim-looking soldiers of the Imperial Order. She knew that the soldiers were doing an invaluable job fighting against Lord Rawl, but still, she just couldn't help the way those men made her skin crawl. She felt as nervous as a fawn being watched by a pack of drooling wolves. Sebastian just didn't understand whenever she'd tried to put it into words for him. He was a man. She supposed he couldn't understand what it felt like to be leered at. How could she make him understand that it was especially daunting to be watched by men such as those, men with such lecherous grins and savage eyes? If she just did as Sister Perdita said, then by morning she and Sebastian could leave. With whatever help the sisters were planning, they had at least assured her that she would be better able to kill Richard Rawl. That was all Jensen cared about now. If she could at last kill Lord Rawl, then she would be free. Her life would be her own. And if that much never came to be for herself, at least the rest of the world would be safe from a butcher of momentous proportions. They had left the horses among trees with bare branches, oaks mostly. Since the trees had yet to leaf out, the forest had at first been open, but they moved steadily into thicker woods of balsam, spruce, and pine, many with thick boughs skirting their trunks all the way to the ground. Although the soaring pines had no lower branches, their spreading crown sealed off the weak moonlight. Jensen followed behind the sister, watching her glide deeper into the silent, gloomy wood. Jensen had spent much of her life in the forests. She could follow the trail left by a chipmunk. Sister Perdita was moving with all the certainty of someone following a road, yet there was no trail Jensen could detect. The ground was covered with the typical forest litter. None of it had been moved by anyone's passing. She saw twigs laying undisturbed, dried leaves intact, delicate mosses that were untouched by any boot. For all Jensen could tell, she and the sister were making their way through virgin woods without any reason or destination, yet she knew by the deliberate way the sister moved that she had to have one, even if only she saw it. And then Jensen caught a faint sound drifting through the thick woods. She saw a blush of light on the underside of branches ahead. The chill air had an odd, unpleasant cast to it, like the faint scent of rot, but with a sickening sweet trace to it. As she followed Sister Perdita through the thick, tightly spaced evergreens, Jensen began to hear the individual voices joined in the low, rhythmic, guttural chant. She couldn't understand the words, but they resonated deep in her chest, and the usual cadence being disturbingly familiar in the back of her mind. Even without hearing the individual words, the cant of them almost seemed to be what lent the stench to the air. The words, peculiar yet hauntingly intimate, cramped her stomach with nausea. Sister Perdita paused to look back to make sure that her charge wasn't flagging. Jensen could see the faint moonlight reflecting off the ring through the sister's lower lip. All the sisters wore one. Jensen found the custom disturbing, even if it was to show loyalty. When Sister Perdita held a low balsam bough aside for her, Jensen stepped through. Hearing the voices in chant beyond had her heart hammering. She could see, through the gap, a clearing in the forest, allowing an open view of the sky and moon overhead. Jensen glanced at the sister's stern expression, then continued on to the brink of the clearing. Before her lay a broad circle of candles, the candles placed so close together that it almost looked like a ring of fire invoked to hold back demons. Just inside the candles, a circle had been made on the bare ground with what looked like white sand that glimmered in the moonlight. All around, just inside the circle, made with the same strange white sand, were geometric symbols Jensen didn't recognize. Seven women sat in a circle inside the sparkling sand. There was one place where it looked like someone belonged but was missing, no doubt Sister Perdita. The women had their eyes closed as they chanted in the strange language. Jensen could see the moonlight reflect off the rings through their lower lips as they spoke the grating, guttural words.
"You are to sit in the center of the circle," Sister Perdita said in a low voice. "Leave your clothes here."
Jensen looked over into her hard eyes.
"What?"
"Remove your clothes and sit in the center facing the breach in the circle." The command was spoken with such cold authority that Jensen knew that she had no choice but to obey. The sister took her cloak, then watched silently. After her dress slipped to the ground, Jensen hugged her goosebump-covered shoulders. Her teeth chattered, but it was more than with the cold. Seeing the sister's silent glare, Jensen swallowed in revulsion and then hurriedly took off the rest of her things. Sister Perdita prodded her with a finger in the back.
"Go!" "What is it I'm doing?"
Jensen's own voice sounded surprisingly powerful to her. Sister Perdita considered the question for a moment before finally answering.
"You are going to kill Richard Rawl. To help you, we are breaching the veil to the underworld."
Jensen shook her head.
"No, no, I'm not doing any such thing. Everyone does it. When you die, you cross the veil. Death is part of life. In order for you to kill Lord Rawl, you are going to need help. We are giving you that help."
"But the underworld is the world of the dead. I can't—"
"You can and you will. You have already given your word. If you don't do this, then how many more will Lord Rawl go on to murder? You will do this, or you will have the blood of each of those victims on your hands. By refusing, you will be invoking the death of countless people. You, Jensen Rawl, will be aiding your brother. You, Jensen Rawl, will be throwing open the doors of death and allowing all those people to die. You, Jensen Rawl, will be the Keeper's disciple. We are asking you to have the courage to reject that and to turn death instead on Richard Rawl."
Jensen shivered, tears running down her face as she considered Sister Perdita's terrible challenge, her terrible choice. Jensen prayed to her mother, asking what she should do, but no sign arrived to help her. Even the voice was silent. Jensen stepped over the candles. She had to do this. She had to end the rule of Richard Rawl. Thankfully, the center of the whole, careful arrangement, at least looked dark. Jensen was mortified by being naked in front of strangers, even if they were women, but that was the least of her fears at the moment. As she stepped across the circle of glimmering white sand, it felt frighteningly colder, as if stepping into the grip of living winter. She shivered and shook, hugging herself as she made her way to the center of the circle of women. In the middle was a grace made of the same white sand, sparkling in the moonlight. She stood staring down at it, a symbol she herself had drawn many times, but her hand was not guided by the gift.
"Sit," Sister Perdita said.
Jensen started with a gasp. The woman was standing right behind her. When she pressed on Jensen's shoulders, she sank to the ground, sitting cross-legged in the center of the eight-sided star in the center of the grace. She noticed then that each of the sisters sat at the extension of a ray coming from each point of the star, save one, directly in front. That spot was empty. Jensen sat naked, shivering in the center of the circle as the Sisters of the Light began their soft chanting again.